Section 2. Breaking down the evidence. For any claim about antiquity, the evidence we might have can come in many forms. Original documents, tombstones, coins, excavated buildings, or indeed anything physically recovered from the past, from dolls to doorknobs. Or astronomical or geographical facts, graffiti on an ancient wall. In short, all kinds of things. However, in the case of Jesus, there was no directly relevant archaeological evidence. Many claims to the contrary exist, but all are unfounded. The Shroud of Turin, for example, is a medieval fake. Likewise, the so-called James Ossuary, which supposedly once contained the brother of Jesus Christ, is inconclusive as evidence for any particular Jesus. Its inscription fails to mention that he is the brother of the Jesus regarded as the Messiah, as opposed to some other Jesus, and is also probably a fake, or rather, part of the inscription on it is. By the same reasoning, the Talpiot tomb almost certainly has no connection to Jesus Christ, nor do any of the other tombs alleged to have been the tomb of Jesus. The claim that the name cluster at Talpiot is too improbable otherwise is refuted by none of those claims taking into account the fact that there were more than a dozen and as many as 20 bodies in that same tomb, greatly increasing the frequency of chance name combinations. For example, another startling chance combination of Jesus-related names had already been found elsewhere in the 19th century. Jesus' family can't have been buried in two places at once. These kinds of finds are statistically inevitable and therefore meaningless. Similarly, coins and inscriptions claim to provide evidence for Jesus actually contain no such information. And so on. I needn't tour through all the forgeries and dubious claims in this category, like fragments of the true cross and all that rubbish. Likewise, no indirect evidence is relevant to determining historicity either. For example, the fact that we have archaeological evidence that Pontius Pilate existed, and we do, makes no significant difference to the probability of either hypothesis, since myth can incorporate real historical facts as easily as histories do, using real people, places, and customs, because narrative context and background were common in fiction of the time and a common feature of faith literature, and could be got from reference books, histories, and common knowledge. Only an extreme non-confirmation could have made a difference. That does mean the probability of historicity would have been greatly reduced by not having any ancillary evidence or by having contrary evidence, for example, proof that Pilate was a fictional person, and it is therefore greatly increased by having that evidence, but only relative to historicity without that evidence, which is of no interest to us. Since we shall assume as a given that ancillary evidence exists, we needn't survey it, since its effect on the consequent probabilities will be the same no matter what that evidence is. Nor will I address negative archaeology, that is, claims that archaeological evidence is missing, since none of that has any relevant effect on the probability of minimal historicity, as I defined it in Chapter 2. For example, arguments like Nazareth or Capernaum didn't exist in the time of Jesus, therefore Jesus didn't exist, are fallacious, with respect to minimal historicity, even if their premises are true, and their premises can rarely be proven anyway. As to the fallacy, on a hypothesis of myth, all locations were necessarily invented for Jesus, whether using actually existing locations or not, which can be just as likely on a minimal theory of historicity, that is, on which most of Jesus' story is still just as mythical. Ergo, even if Nazareth didn't exist, or in fact, even if it did, this is just as likely if Jesus existed as if he didn't, or near enough as to make no notable difference. This argument only ceases to be fallacious if the invented elements are too extensive to explain as a product of mythic development over a historical person, which for Jesus is not the case. The results are similar for every other negative claim, except perhaps claims regarding geographical error in Mark, but those are vague enough that I shall set them aside. There is only one kind of evidence left: texts, books, letters, etc., which are reconstructed by modern scholars from a variety of manuscripts, which are copies of copies of copies of even earlier originals now lost. I will consider only texts that are known to have been written, or probably written, before 120 AD, or that record information from an identifiable source before that date, as after that time, we can't reasonably expect there to have been any surviving witnesses to the original decade of the cult's creation, in the 30s AD, due to the limits of life expectancy, as we saw in Element 22. And also because after that time, the quantity of bogus literature about Jesus and early Christianity exploded to an immense scale, making the task of sorting truth from fiction effectively impossible, as we saw in Element 44. It should be noted that this fact entails that the origin of Christianity is historically in a different class from other more mundane historical questions. Other events simply did not generate nearly the same explosion of forgery and redaction. In fact, few events generated much of any, and therefore the survival and detection of accurate information is more frequently possible on other questions of history, but radically less so for the question we are here to examine. The remaining relevant texts can be divided into two general categories: things written by Christians and things not written by Christians. In the latter category, we have almost nothing. We do have some such material, but most of it cannot be established as independent of things we already have that were written by Christians, like the canonical Gospels, and therefore almost all of it must be excluded as irrelevant. What little we have any plausible reason still to consider will be examined in the next chapter. There, we will also examine what little we have of independent and causally relevant Christian texts that are not already in the New Testament. Again, most Christian literature is irrelevant, either not being demonstrably independent, for example, statements based on the Gospels, or not being plausibly connected to anything actually true about Jesus, for example, the infancy Gospels. But all the evidence in these categories that is relevant, whether Christian or non-Christian, is generally the latest primary evidence we have, chronologically speaking. I will therefore address it first in the next chapter and work back in time to the earliest surviving evidence. That leaves the New Testament. Whether any Christian documents that we presently have date earlier than or even to the same period as the documents in the New Testament is a vexed question that has never been answered with certainty. And not being able to date a document is often the death knell for establishing relevance, because if we can't even prove something was written in the first century, then we often can't prove its independence or its causal link to any actual facts of the matter. Speculating earlier dates does not get around this problem, because only a speculative conclusion can be reached with a speculative premise. Since there is no Christian document pertaining to Jesus that we can confidently date earlier than the New Testament, any such evidence will be examined, if at all relevant, in the next chapter along with all other extra-biblical evidence. As for the New Testament itself, it can be divided into five categories: authentic letters, inauthentic letters, uncertain letters, the Gospels, and Acts. I distinguish Acts from the Gospels because Acts, unlike the Gospels, is a history of the spread of Christianity after the death of Jesus, and thus could have different sources than the Gospels and covers a different subject of inquiry. It also comes later than the earliest of the Gospels we have, and thus is also among the latest evidence we have. I therefore will treat it second, in chapter 9, after the extra-biblical evidence in chapter 8. Then I will treat the four canonical Gospels in chapter 10, and finally the epistles in chapter 11, the authentic ones being the earliest, the nearest to the origins of Christianity, of any evidence we have. The inauthentic letters date later, in some cases much later. Likewise, the book of Revelation. The uncertain letters can't be reliably placed in time at all. But any of these, worth a look, will nevertheless be treated in that chapter. There is a great deal wrong with how a consensus has been reached on the dates and authorship of all these Christian materials, and the conclusions usually cited as established tend to be far more questionable than most scholars let on. Nevertheless, as I found the task of trying to sort this out impossible, I will mostly rely on the majority consensus for no other reason than that I haven't anything better to work with. I projected it would take a minimum of 7 years of full-time research to adequately examine and analyze all the evidence and arguments regarding the dating and authorship of these materials, and that with no actual prospect of any clear resolution for any of it, since it is not simply a given that we actually know the answers to any debated question. I think there is a lot of work here that needs to be properly redone in New Testament studies, and I'm not alone in thinking that. That caveat aside, this is what we, quote-unquote, know.